So, what did I want to start with? So, yeah, you know, I wanted to make sort of an ideological statement. Sorry, okay, what are we going to do today? So mostly I want to tell you how to compute the things that we talked about in the last 2 days. But I also wanted to say, you know, I was meaning to do something else yesterday. I was meaning to finish yet another handout yesterday, but we didn't. Like, we didn't even start, okay? So I want to at least give you a preview of what's in that handout that we don't, that we didn't cover and why I care about it. So the first 10 minutes are sort of off topic, okay? And the first thing I have to say about it is, well, you know, what is usual knot theory? So U stands for usual. What's usual knot theory? It's the planar algebra generated by, and we talked about planar algebras already, generated by a single crossing, or, you know, if you all care about orientation, then maybe there is overcrossing and undercrossing, but sort of basically this planar algebra, and modeled out by Rademeister 1, 2, 3, and again, sometimes you don't mod out by Rademeister 1, but that's the small details. Basically, this is ordinary knot theory. Okay? Now, algebraically speaking, it's very hard to be a planar algebra. When you talk about algebra, sort of the notion planarity barely makes sense. Okay, I mean, how do you describe if something is planar? It's very hard. Basically, you make an algebraic construction. For that construction to note whether it is living in the plane or on a genus 7 surface is very hard. It's very unusual. Okay? It somehow requires too much intelligence from basic groups and tensors or whatever. So, you know, I'll give you an example. In all quantum invariants have to do with, if you have a tangle, you associate to it an invariant, which lives in the tensor product of several representation spaces. So R1 here, R1 dual here, R2 here, R2 dual here, or maybe something like that. And then the way you contract, or the way you construct, the way you compose tangles, the corresponding invariant, so if you wanted to compose this with the invariant of this tangle, and this one was in R3 dual, the way you could compose is if this invariant lived in R3, and then you would evaluate a vector on its dual. But nothing here is planar. You could connect this line to this line, even if the connection could not be drawn in the plane. Okay? And there are other examples. So when you talk about the multivariable Alexander polynomial, and you follow my former student, Jana Archibald, she constructs a certain planar algebra for which compositions at the end give you the multivariable Alexander polynomial. But again, these compositions don't even see that the compositions are in the plane. So algebraically speaking, planar algebras are unnatural, or said differently, almost every time, or many times, I wouldn't say. I it's hard to make statistics, okay? But many times, when you talk about a planar algebra, when you construct a planar algebra, you've actually automatically constructed a circuit algebra. So let me define a circuit algebra, okay? A circuit algebra is the more natural notion, in my mind, okay? So what's a circuit algebra? Well, it's what runs computers, okay? So a circuit algebra has a number of components. Maybe there are transistors, resistors, capacitors, OR gates, AND gates, XOR gates, I don't know what. Okay? And and each component has a number of lines coming out. So, you know, if it's a transistor, then it has, I don't know, three lines, usually labeled B, C, and E. I don't know why. Okay? But if it's a resistor, it just has two lines and they're coming out and they're symmetric. Okay? And then you can connect the output of one transistor to the input of a resistor and then build a bigger and bigger circuit. And then if you have two big circuits, you can compose them together to make every and even bigger circuits. But how you connect in the, sorry, no, how the, sorry, what matters is which leg of which circuit, which leg of what circuit connects to which leg of what circuit, but it's completely irrelevant how you place these connections, these wires in the plane. Okay? So when electrical engineers draw the circuit for a flip-flop, that's a certain basic memory cell that, you know, there are a few billions of these in my computer. No, I'm actually lying, only a few millions. Because the modern memory cells look different. But anyway, a few millions of these are on my computer. It really doesn't matter whether the wire coming out of this gate and going into the input of this gate goes above or below this wire. It's not even indicated. They just let them cross through, and the understanding is that there is no electrical contact between them, but it just doesn't matter how they go. Okay? Likewise, when you connect four memory chips and another small black chip that does I don't know what, in order to make a memory card, it just doesn't matter how the legs of this chip connect to the leg of this chip and connect to the output legs. It's connected in some way on this green board, but how, it just doesn't matter. And in fact, this green board typically has many layers so they can cross each other freely. And it doesn't matter which line goes in which layer. Okay? So what's a circuit algebra? A circuit algebra is a collection Cn. So this is a set for every n, for any n. And you think of it as the set of circuits that have n output lines or input lines, okay, n wires coming out. And then, so this is sort of the object, and then what are the operations? So the operations are for every number of input circuits. So this will be black chip number one. This will be black chip number two, like over there. So for every number of input circuits, each one of which has its own number of external legs, and for every number of output circuits, output legs, so these are these golden things down here, so for any number here, it's you have an operation of gluing these together to make a bigger circuit, which just amounts to connecting some wires from the top to the bottom and some wires between one and another, and maybe even wires going from one chip to itself. That's what electrical engineers do. Okay? And of course, what we got at the end is a bigger circuit that could be composed into, you know, you could plug this into the memory slot down at the bottom of my laptop, and you get an even bigger circuit. Okay? So that's a circuit algebra. Okay? And then there are also variants. So, you know, you could declare that some of the lines go in and some of the line goes out, and you insist on compatibility. You may declare that there are colors, so, you know, you can plug a USB thing into a USB thing, but not into a headphone jack. Okay, so you may declare that there are colors, but the basic idea is the same. Okay, having said all of this, Okay, so one further thing, or one thing that I said, is that in practice, every time you many times when you construct a planar algebra, you've automatically constructed a circuit algebra. So if you construct a knot invariant by planar algebra means, it will be automatic, it will in practice, the target space will be a circuit algebra, so automatically it will be an invariant of the circuit algebra, which is generated by one basic component, and subject to the relations, Riedemeister 1, 2, and 3. This circuit algebra is what's called virtual knots. So, virtual knots is sort of the natural domain space of algebraic knot invariants. Okay?
And if we add to the planar algebra just a generator which corresponds, I don't care. So, this
is so alternatively, you could have written this as the planar algebra in which you add the generator which says you can pass lines past each other. Basically, you could add this generator for this for intersections like this, but then you have to mod out by more relations to indicate that sort of it doesn't, that this doesn't really matter. Okay, but instead you, if you make it official, and then you will have to debate for a long time what exactly are these extra relations that you add. And if you know virtual knot theory, it's always confusing what relations exactly to add. The answer is, this is the answer.
Okay?
Anyway, so what's a virtual knot? Or, you know, if you want it in these terms, so a virtual knot is made out of several components, or a virtual tangle. It's made out of several components. Some of the legs might go and become outputs, so you can glue them to other things later on. And some may be connected internally, but how they connect is completely irrelevant. This is not a connection, it's not there. This is not a crossing. Okay, it's just an artifact of the projection. I don't know. Okay? Why did I... So from... Basically what I'm trying to say is that virtual knots are completely natural from algebra perspective. Now, the theory we talked about in the last 2 days was actually a quotient of virtual knots. So if you look at the relations that I wrote on the board when I was talking about W knots, I called it W knots all the time, right? And when you look at the relations that I wrote for W knots, you will find that W knots were virtual knots, so the circuit algebra, modulo one further relation. So all relations that I wrote, sorry, I'm talking about the basic thing, just the crossings, and the vertices and the caps you can add later. But the basic thing is the cap, the vertex, the crossing. So if you just look at the relations that involve the crossing, okay? So then it was the relations of ordinary knot theory, then the relations saying that the virtual crossing isn't relevant at all. So basically the relation saying that we're not talking about a planar algebra but about a circuit algebra. And then there was, so far it's just virtual knots. And then there was a single additional relationship, overcrossings commute. So overcrossings commute says that if you have a picture like this, it's equal to a picture like like this, but not under, okay? Why am I telling you this? So just to continue the story, so really there are three spaces of knots. There are more, okay, but there are at least three ones that you want to care about. There is the usual knots, there are the virtual knots, and there are the W knots. So you see it's nicely set to be U, V, and W. And the usual knot is the planar algebra defined of one crossing modulo Riedemeister 2 and 3, or maybe 1, 2, and 3. Virtual knots, it's the circuit algebra with the same thing. And W knots, it's the circuit algebra like V knots, but also modded out by the overcrossings commute relation. There is an obvious map from here to here. If you could make a circuit in the plane, you can just also make it abstractly. There is an obvious map from here to here, namely the quotient. This is not an exact sequence. It's just a sequence of maps. And don't confuse it. Not every time you write a three-step sequence, it's an exact sequence. It has nothing to do with exactness. The composition is not zero. Okay? But now you apply the expansions machine to each of these, and it turns out that the expansion machine sort of respects these maps. So when you apply the expansion machines here, you get Kashiwara-Verne, and this is what I talked about last few times. When you apply the expansion machine here, you get a Drinfeld associators. So this is Drinfeld. Okay? This composition map, which isn't zero, somehow tells you that Drinfeld associators are related to Kashiwara-Verne, and I can make it explicit, but not in the time that I have. Okay? It's completely explicit, and in fact, this is these papers by Alexeyev and Torossian. Their content is this map from U, is a discussion of the map from U to W. Okay? And it's also in my paper with with Zhuzhana Dancho, Dr. Jan Dancho. So if you look, it's under this in one of the handouts. Okay? Now, over here in the middle, most likely, or certainly, what lies is this Ettinghoff-Kashdan theory of quantization of Libye algebras, and it's not done in full, but it uses associators, or rather the relationship with V-naught is not done in full, but it uses associators in the same way that Alexeyev and Torossian use associators over here. And when you look at their construction and reduce it modulo, essentially the relation that corresponds to overcrossings commute, their construction projects to the construction, to one of the constructions that occurs in Alexeyev-Torossian. So the evidence is extremely strong that this lives here, but the details are not worked out. Okay? And again, this is only I'm only telling you a tiny bit about it. But one reason why the details are not worked out is because I sort of lied to you, and it's not entirely clear what virtual knots really are, okay? Even though I made it appear as if it is. And the reason is that, so you want to define virtual knots to be just the circuit algebra defined by these generators, or generated by these generators, modulo Riedemeister moves. But you see, when we write Riedemeister moves for knot theory, there are actually several types of Riedemeister moves. So when you write Riedemeister 3, for example, then in Riedemeister 3, so Riedemeister 3 involves three strands. I don't care which one is over, which one is under, but often they're oriented. And when they're oriented, you could either have a cyclic orientation here in the middle, or, so let's call this case C, and there is also a second possibility, which is that it's not cyclic, but rather it's what could appear inside braids, so let's call it case B. In braids, you'll never have a cyclic thing here. So there are, and in ordinary knot theory, by somehow a non-trivial coincidence, and again, I could tell you a little more about it, and it's more non-trivial than you would immediately think. But in ordinary knot theory, it doesn't matter if you mod out by both types of Riedemeister moves or only by this type. Okay? But in virtual knot theory, it does matter. So in fact, there are 50 shades of virtual knot theory. Sorry for the joke. Why isn't this working? I don't know, it's not working. Anyway, so there are 50 shades of virtual knot theory, or at least 18, and at some point, a group of people whose picture is here, and which includes Eva and myself, I should add the rest then, and Finton and Lewis, we sort of checked whether the, whether the natural conjecture for the associated graded is correct. So you all, right, if you remember how we got the associated graded in the W case, we had a conjecture for what it is, and then by constructing an expansion, we found that the conjecture was right. Mm-hmm. So for virtual knot theory, we computed, we checked if the conjecture is right by computations, by explicit computer computations for like 18 different shades of virtual knot theory. And the answer is, it seems to always be right. But we don't have a general proof and we don't know And we don't have a general construction of an expansion. We don't know which of these cases is the one that sort of the best, the one that fits with algebra best. It's probably the one here, the one in purple. But these are just dimensions of various spaces that corresponds to one of the cases. But it's not worked out.
Sorry, so yeah. You're saying the people, so there is no well-defined notion of a virtual knot theory?
Well, I mean, if you read Lou Kaufman's paper on virtual knot theory, there is a well-defined version, the version that Lou Kaufman refers to.
Okay, but there
but
are
which one is somehow, but is it the right version?
Okay. Yeah, but there are also
is this the version that has, that best connects to the rest of mathematics? The answer is, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think the correct version of virtual knot theory, in the correct version of virtual knot theory, you should not mod out by the cyclic Riedemeister move. Mm-hmm. Okay? And you know, you have evidence for this too, if you look from the perspective of categorification, right? Because, you know, if you look at Kovanov-Rosansky invariants, they're invariant under this one, but not under this one. So basically, is there a well-defined notion of virtual knot theory? It depends who you ask.
Exactly. So it was a bad question. So the good question is, who are the people who define these 18 versions?
This one, 18 versions?
Yeah.
Oh, myself and the people pictured there.
Ah, so you defined 18 versions.
It's not really 18. I mean, many of them are silly. Many of them are silly reductions. In reality, there are only the real choices are whether or not you mod out by Riedemeister 1 and which exactly Rhinomaster 1 also has several brands, but sort of small number of brands. And the real, real choice is whether or not you mod out by the cyclic Rhinomaster move. Whether or not you mod out by the cyclic Rhinomaster move. Anyway, that was meant to be a 5-minute introduction, or not introduction. I just wanted to tell you that there's more than the W story that is the center of what I'm talking about, okay? And that it's not fully worked out, but it goes along similar lines. Okay, I've done my best. I don't know. So now I want to talk about computing the W invariant. So in fact, and as I said, I'm essentially repeating the talk I gave here, well, actually in ETH, in Zurich, a month ago. Okay? But now we have more information, so we can perhaps understand it a bit better. So here is the handout. It's the front page of the several handouts stapled together that I gave you. Okay? And I should say that it's related to quantum field theory, but I will not say much about it now. I didn't say much about it then. It's just related. I should say, well, the point is computations. I really mean computations. These are the real wheels and trees that you get as an output. Okay. And I should say that I hope to have time to tell you that it reduces to excellent formulas for the Alexander polynomial. And when I say excellent, there is a meaning to it. These are formulas that do things that other formulas don't do. Okay? But again, I have to explain later. And now let's start talking about content. So, the first bit we already did. So you already know what ribbon-knotted balloons and hoops are. These are these creatures, okay? The riddle I think I already asked you, but I want to remind you. Ribbon-knotted balloons and hoops are about knotting S1s and S2, but they implicitly contain also the knotting of tubes, okay? Or not implicitly. The knotting of tubes can be reconstructed within the knotting of balloons and hoops. And now a few examples. So the most basic example is the unknotted hoop and the unknotted balloon. And again, the way to interpret this is to blow it up, to inflate it in R4. So really, but along the t-axis. So this really stands for that, where the t-coordinate is shown here, okay? But then there are also the sort of the parallel of the Hopfling, the positive and the negative Hopfling, and these are a balloon with one strand, with one hoop puncturing through it, and it could puncture through in either one of two orientations. And again, three-dimensionally, this looks singular, but once you blow this ping-pong racket to a balloon, this singularity disappears, because blue remains at t equals zero, while the membranes are pushed to positive t or to negative t. Okay? Here's a bigger example. I think you already know how to read this as a KBH. It has two balloons. Well, they're connected to the point at infinity. The base point is at the point at infinity. So it has two balloons, this small one, and it connects via a strand to the point at infinity, and the big one, which is also connected via a strand to the point at infinity, and it has two hoops. One starting from infinity, going around and coming back, and the other one likewise, okay? And in fact, here I'm also telling you that there is a map, or I'm telling you about Okay, so there is a map from ordinary tangle theory to this theory. And I think the map is defined by the picture. So basically, if you see an ordinary tangle, you replace every strand in that tangle by a parallel pair of a balloon and a hoop. Or that's what happens along the bulk of the strand. But then, when you're at the ends, you do special things. So at the tails, you just cap the balloon and let the hoop go to infinity. At the heads, you connect both things to infinity. And you do special things at the crossings, and basically the pictures here tell you what to do. So, or alternatively, the pictures right after tell you what to do in the crossings. Okay? And in fact, there is also something to do at the virtual crossings, and in the virtual crossings, you do the virtual crossing. Okay? I should just add one word. Delta is not there are KBHs that are not in the image of delta. Okay? Because really, the ones that are in the image of delta, like the balloon is the hoop is a shadow of the balloon. But they don't have to be, but it's like Peter Pan, the person can be away from its shadow. Okay? There are relations, but I think we already know them, so I don't want to go through them again. I should say that delta injects knots into knotted balloons and hoops, so there is no loss of information by talking about balloons and hoops as opposed to talking about tangles. Delta is not surjective, I already told you, but actually, if you allow yourself punctures and cuts, it is surjective. If you puncture a balloon, it disappears. If you cut a hoop, it disappears. So basically, if you want to get an arbitrary KBH as in the image of delta, to be in the image of delta, you can always use delta to construct a bigger KBH and then remove a few components, and then it's surjective. Okay? And finally, there is a list of relations or combinatorial relations that describe KBHs, but this list is still conjectural. Okay? Okay. Now, sorry, this is still mostly a review. Now is new stuff. Okay? So, the nice thing about KBHs is that they have an algebraic structure. There are operations on KBHs, and with these operations, you can construct every KBH from the four generators that I mentioned before, from these four. Okay? So if I will ever construct an invariant of KBHs or compute an invariant of KBHs, it's enough that I will find a target space that has the same operations and map the generators to elements in the target space and verify that they satisfy the relations. Okay? So it's always valuable to have a good set of operations. What are the operations? So I kind of hinted what they are already. So if X is a topological space, then pi 1 is a group, pi 2 is an abelian group, and pi 1 acts on pi 2. KBHs sort of play the role of both pi 1 and pi 2 because they have both hoops and balloons. Okay? So they have operations that mirror the product of pi 1, the product of pi 2, and the action of pi 1 and pi 2. And here are these operations. Sorry, am I wasting your time? Because I did say it a month and a half ago. I think maybe I should say it. Okay. Anyway, so if you have a generic KBH with balloons U, V, and hoops X and Y, and I really mean that these could be knotted. I'm only drawing them unknotted because I have limited space on the page. And there could be more components, but okay? So if you have one like that, there are three operations that I can do to it, at least three. Okay? Well, there is the head multiply operation or the hoop multiply operation, and this is the parallel of multiplication in pi 1. And head multiply of component X with component Y with output called Z is the operation of taking the hoop X and the hoop Y, ignoring everything else, not touching anything else, and going along X, then going along Y, and calling the resulting thing Z. Okay? Again, this could have been knotted, and it's well defined even if it's knotted. Okay? And it's like the, it's like multiplication in pi 1, except it's not multiplication in pi 1. We don't model by homotopy, but by isotopy. And it's not a binary operation, it's a unary operation. It's an operation whose input is a single KBH with two components, and its output is a single KBH with one component, and maybe more, okay? But it's not a binary operation. It does not take two independent KBHs. If you have two independent knots, it doesn't make sense to trace one and then trace the other. But if you have a two-component thing, it does make sense to trace one and then trace the other, if the two components do both connect to a base point. Okay? So it's a unary, not a binary operation, yet it's an analog of multiplication of pi 1. Likewise, there is tail multiply, or balloon multiply, in which you take two balloons and output a single balloon W, which is obtained by, well, connecting these two balloons by a tunnel, and topologically this is just a bigger balloon. Okay? And this is the exact analog of multiplication in pi 2, but with the same comment. It's a binary operation. Sorry, it's a unary operation, not a binary operation. Okay? And finally, there is a tail by head action of tail u by head x. So pi 1 acts on pi 2. And what it is you take the balloon u and you take its neck or its string and you tie it along the hoop x. You pull it around the hoop x. And if you think about it, that's the analog of the way, this is exactly how pi 1 acts on pi 2 in ordinary homotopy theory. Okay? Are you with me? Okay. Now, there are axioms, so, or properties, if you wish. So, of course, you know, multiplication is associative, but the word associative does not make sense in our context because we don't, these are not binary operations. But there is a remnant of associativity. And the remnant of associativity is that if you have a KBH with three components, let's say three balloons called A, B, and C, then you can check that merging A and B, multiplying A and B, calling the output A, then multiplying A and C, calling the output A, the net effect is that you've multiplied A, B, and C and called the output A, is the same as doing it in some other order. Okay? And this is sort of a unary version of associativity, and it holds both for balloon multiply and for hoop multiply. Okay? Then, when a group acts on another group, there is an axiom. One of the axioms is that if you act on a product, it's like acting on the first, then acting on the second, then multiplying the two resulting things. Right? This is the definition of a group action. So there is a similar thing in our case. If you tail multiply, then act, it's the same as acting, acting, and then tail multiply. You can draw all of these things and they're very easy to verify. Okay? And finally, if you act by a product, in a group action, if you act by a product, it's like acting by the first and acting by the second, and this is the unary version of this. Okay? And I should have said there is actually yet another operation. There are actually a few further operations. There are the punctures and cuts. You can remove components. I mentioned this before. And then there is a single binary operation. So far, all the operations were unary. But there is also a single binary operation, and it's the connected sum. So if you have two KBHs, you can, so, you know, you have one KBH over here, another one over here. The base point for this one is here. The base point for this one is here. You can pull the base point to be next to each other and merge them. And now you have a KBH with double the number of balloons and hoops. Or not double, but more. Okay, with a union of the set of balloons and unions of the set of hoops. And you can show that this operation is well defined. Okay? So this is like the connect sum operation in ordinary knot theory. Okay? Definition. I didn't quite list the full set of axioms because it's not really necessary. But I did list the interesting ones. Okay? But basically, an algebraic structure that has this connect sum operation, okay, that has, first of all, it has a set of objects, what should I call it, M of T and H. So for every finite set T and every set finite set H, it has a set of objects M, T, and H. So these are the objects. And then, having operations HM, X, Y, Z, whenever X and Y belong to H, and Z is a new label, so it does not belong to H. And an operation I should have written it in full. So HM XY Z will go from MTH into M of T minus X and Y, because we've removed the hoops X and Y, but added a new balloon Z, a new hoop X, Z. You must have operations like this. And likewise, operations TM, U, V, and W, and likewise, operations TH, A, U, X, and likewise, a connected sum. Okay? So whenever you have a collection like this, I will call it a metagroup action. So it's like a group action. Sorry, and whenever this operation satisfies these axioms, it's like a group action, but it's not quite. Okay? It's the isotopy version, or the embedding version, of pi 1 acting on pi 2, of a group action. So it's group actions made unary. Okay? So, my goal is to construct another such thing out of finite type theory. Okay, out of the theory that I described before. And then the other such metagroup action will be the target of an invariant. And if I will have explicit formulas in the other MTH, then it means that I've computed my invariant. Okay? That I've been able to compute my invariant. Maybe I don't want to say much about this slide, only to say that the operations on tangles, so tangles are a planar algebra, the operations on tangles make sense or can be rewritten using these operations. So going to these operations, we don't lose anything. Okay. So now I have to tell you what the target space is of the invariant. The domain space was KBHs, and now I have to construct a new metagroup, which I will call M, and it will be the target. Okay? Are you with me? Am I too... I think I'm probably too floating, I don't know. Anyway, let me tell you what is the motivation for the definition. The definition is written here, but let me first tell you how to motivate it, and then, we'll see. So, so remember that the target space of an expansion called was ATH. This was the associated gradle. In fact, it was the associated gradle of KBH. Okay? But, so, well, maybe I'll write it. It's GER of KBH, of those knotted balloons and loops. And what was it? Well, it was linear combinations of pictures that looked like this. So they have a number of tails that are like, or the things that correspond to the balloons were lines with only heads, okay? With cups at the end. And then a list of things like these. These were red before, and these were, this is H, and these were blue in the pictures we had before. And then modulus on relations, which right now I don't want to repeat, but later I will need them. Okay? Sorry. But then, on top of that, we had arrows. And the arrows had the property that they always went, it could be arranged so that they always have tails on the red side and heads on the blue side. But then there could also be trees. So it could be trees. And there could also be wheels. Okay? So these were the pictures we were talking about. Okay? Maybe I'll say two things. So, first of all, the operations, so these four operations that I mentioned before, okay? These, they respect the grading, okay? Or they respect the filtration on the space of KBH. So they descend to the associated gradient. And what they are on the associated gradient is exactly what you would expect. Okay? So they're just a natural thing that you can do in the associated gradient. So let me tell you what each of them is. Okay? So what's head multiply or hoop multiply? So hoop multiply, it's a bit hard to draw, but it's exactly what you would expect. So you see, if you want to multiply x and y and call the output z, well, these h's correspond to the hoops, So, you know, there will be one called X and one called Y. And multiplication in the topology, like here, is concatenation. So multiplication here will also be concatenation. So there is an operation on such KBH, on such diagrams, which is you take two strands and you just put them one on top of each other. And once again, you got a legitimate diagram, right? Because you still only have heads on the heads and tails on the tails. So this is concatenate two blue lines. Okay, what is tail multiply? So tail multiply actually requires a bit of topology work, but let me tell you what happens. So tail multiply should be somehow to concatenate two capped things. Okay? If you try to concatenate two capped things, the obvious sort of mental image that should come in your mind is a Y picture like this with two caps at the end. Right? And you see, if you have a tube that's splitting into two, so this should be a smooth vertex. And indeed, in this picture, right here, there is really a smooth vertex. So if you have a tube that's splitting into two and then both ends are capped, then topologically, this is the same as a single cap, okay? But I have to tell you what are the rules of, like, if you had arrow tails here and arrow tails here, I have to tell you what is the rule of how to move them to the trunk, okay? The rule is you just move them to the trunk. That's all, okay? And since tails commute, it doesn't matter in which order. Okay? So the rule is, so at the end, the rule is that you, in practice, just merge two lines here. Because you just combine all the tails that attach to this line with all the tails that attach to this line, and it doesn't matter in which order. So this becomes merging two red lines. And then finally, there is THA or UX. So if this is U and this is X.
Wait, but it could be also lines which ending on these things.
So this is after you get rid of arrow heads. So remember that there is also remember that if you have an arrow head near the top,
okay,
it's equal to zero. So first of all, if there were heads on here, you first of all get rid of all of them, then you merge. Okay? And THA is in fact exactly the process of getting rid of heads. So you see, what's THA? So the way to sort of write if you look at the correspondence between this picture and these balloon pictures, my balloons are like what are they called? Sausage balloons. The balloons that you make dogs with. Okay? Sorry. It came out better than expected. But anyway, so they're sort of longish balloons with the neck at the bottom and connected to infinity and with sort of a tip at the end. Okay? Anyway, so this is like the cap, and this is like the neck. And the operation is to take the neck and tie it around one of the hoops. So the corresponding operation over here would be to take one of these hoops make a second copy of it. Making a second copy, which just means anything that connected to the old copy gets to choose between connecting to the new copy, a copy or the old copy. But anyway, you make another copy of it, put it under one of the existing tails, one of the existing balloons. Now you have a longer balloon, but it also has many heads on it. And then you get rid of all the heads by the complicated procedure. Okay? So these two are easy operation, and this one is hard. Okay? So this operation is put one of the balloons, one red strand on top of a copy of a blue strand and get rid of arrow heads. Basically, if I put this on top of this one, I have heads. But I slide them away while paying a price. Okay? So ATH is also a metagroup. A metagroup action. Okay? But maybe I'll just say it in one word, and then we should probably take a break. Okay? But so let me first say it informally and then say it formally. Okay? G. Okay. So informally, Z, so we have a map Z going from KBH into here. Z was defined using exponentials. And it's a nice property of exponentials that when you do natural operations to them, the result is still an exponential. So this is like the typical example is the BCH formula. So if you multiply two exponentials, e to the x times e to the y, the result is the exponential of something. Okay? But it's a more general phenomenon. Okay? We expect our z to live not in this general space, but in the small subspace of this space, which can be written in terms of exponentials, in which everything is an exponential. Now, this can be made completely precise. And the precise statement is that this is a bi-algebra. I have to put a structure of a bi-algebra in it. And then in a bi-algebra, there is a notion of group-like elements. Group-like elements are like exponentials. And all one has to check is that these operations are also compatible with the coproduct. And once they're compatible with the coproduct, they will preserve the property of being group-like, and therefore preserve the property of being exponentials. Okay? Now, how do you make this into a bi-algebra? Well, I should say that without the details, you use the natural thing. Okay? So I'm running out of... I should either do it in detail or not, but I'll just say that it's standard, okay? In the same way that you make chord diagrams in ordinary knot theory by algebra. But the moral is that instead of talking about Z, you can talk about the logarithm of z, or the sort of logarithm in quotes, which is logarithm in this by algebra sense, and call it zeta. And then the zeta will have its values in a much smaller space. The space of things here, which are somehow exponentialized. So it is zeta that I will compute. Okay? And maybe we should take a break, and after the break I will start working on zeta. Okay?